It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we begin a whatever day it is now, I think it's a Thursday. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Good.
I'm well.
Good to be here. One of those days where every day has been like that. As we always talk about it. Every day it's like scrambling till the last second.
Yeah.
Not to find things to talk about.
Right. Yeah.
But just to organize.
We never shut up. I mean, we can. Whether the mic's on, whether we're here, it doesn't matter. We keep talking. But yeah, just sorting all of the stuff that happens.
We weren't going to start with this, but you and I were just asking the questions. Mm. And whenever there's a bill that's running through, that's been passed by the House and running through the Senate, and there's differences in what they would have to eventually do.
Right.
In the bill, but talking about the Senate gay marriage bill,
mm-hmm.
that's up there now that would basically codify gay marriage.
Right.
And you have, after the Supreme Court decision,
mm-hmm.
and you have, some of the Republican complaints on this bill is it wouldn't protect individuals like a baker. They mention in many articles, the baker, Jack Phillips,
mm-hmm.
from Colorado, right. That it would protect religious institutions to still do the things that they would want to do,
mm-hmm.
that they couldn't even be sued. Now, the Religious Protection Act would protect Jack Phillips, but as they said, the problem there is the punishment is the process.
Yeah,
being able to file the lawsuit and destroy somebody legally with the money that it costs, that's one of the things that Republicans, for example, Texas Congressman Chip Roy was talking about that. You and I actually went further. We went further than that when we were discussing the bill, and so we know that. We've asked the question, if a state, because I think it was Alabama after the gay marriage ruling. Well, first off, let me just give you some background on myself. One of the things, I haven't changed many of my opinions in the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
One of the opinions I did change was the fact that I believe that government ought to be out of the marriage business completely.
Yeah. Right.
One thing that has changed my mind is even if government does things that I believe is moral and good and promote society in a beneficial way, when the other side comes in, when you set that open, we get to things like the insanity of critical race theory, the liberal transgender activist movement.
Mm-hmm. They decide what your morals are going to be.
Right. And so I believe I believe that in the marriage business, government should be out of it. And for the sake of discussion here. I will agree with the gay marriage ruling of the 14th Amendment, where it goes from equal protection under the law to equal treatment under the law.
Mm-hmm.
If they really enforce the equal treatment that everybody should be treated the same, because that was the basis of that law. Nobody should be treated any differently. Does everybody agree?
I know. All right, where's he going with this?
Does everybody agree that everybody should be treated equally? Does everybody, excuse me, let me talk, let me even specify more, to the people on the left, does everybody on the left believe that everybody ought to be treated exactly equal in the United States under the law? Because that's what changed in the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
Under the gay marriage ruling from the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then everybody pays the exact same amount in taxes tomorrow.
Yep.
Nobody pays any more. There's no greater percentage than
amount,
anybody pays.
Not percentage.
Not amount.
Amount.
Right. Amount. Everybody pays the exact amount because it was the left that pushed everybody ought to be treated exactly equal. Well, we know that's not the case.
Right.
Under the 14th Amendment. We treat people differently all the time.
Yep.
Based on what? Based on what we what we believe is best for society.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years, the majority of things we did, I believe, was the right thing. Then I realized, wait a minute, when you know, the libertarian in me, after looking at all these things, and I made this decision long ago. You know, I just said, I believe they should be out of the marriage business completely.
Mm.
You know, whatever. If you wish to be married in your church, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And if you wish to call yourself married, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, government, get out of it completely. And so the whole point is, if the government now, federal government comes in and says, you must recognize any marriage from any state, but you're a state that says, we're out of the marriage business. What under the Constitution dictates that any state must recognize any marriage?
Right.
Heterosexual? Homosexual?
Mm-hmm.
Polygamy?
Right. Because that's what this bill does in the Senate.
Right.
If the gay marriage ruling is overturned, Supreme Court ruling from several years ago is overturned, at that point, states could come out and say, we're going to ban gay marriage. This bill would require them, even if they do that, to recognize gay marriage from other states.
Well, forget about even banning gay marriage. If they just said, we don't recognize any marriage.
Under this bill, they would have to recognize a marriage from another state.
And we don't recognize
every other state.
We don't recognize any marriage because we're getting out of the marriage business completely. We're out of it.
Yep.
If you wish to get married and your church wishes to marry you.
Yep.
Because for most people in the history of marriage, the only important part of marriage for most people was the church part of it.
Yes.
Not all. But the majority of people over the history of marriage, it was the religious portion of it.
Right.
And I've said, I know that doesn't include all the people that say, hey, let's run off, you know, the Charlie Harpers that run off to Vegas to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie from 2 1/2 Men, for people that don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But for the vast majority, so that's what matters. It's okay. This is a covenant before God. This is what this is about.
Right.
So I've changed my mind on a lot of different things, unless my only exception would be, and I know the left would never agree to this because the left does not want equality under the law. They only want equality under the law for what they want equality under the law for.
Right. Exactly.
But if they don't, and everybody must be treated equally, but here's the point. Even if everybody must be treated equally, a state can just say, I'm out of the marriage business. Mm-hmm. We're treating everybody equally. Do what you want. We don't care. We're not monitoring it. We're not a licensing bureau for it.
Right. And what if it happened? And I don't know. I got to go read the text of the bill. What if a state decided they're going to legalize polygamy? Let's say the gay marriage ruling was overturned and states just started doing what they're going to do. And a state, we'll just use, I don't know, out of the blue, Utah as an example. And they're going to legalize polygamy. Every other state would have to recognize polygamy.
First off,
is there an exception to this?
Well, I mean, Romney would issue a letter, you know, saying that he personally disapproves of it. He released a letter yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, right.
People don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That he personally disapproves of it, but he believes it should happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's how he dealt with that he believes with the Senate bill. He believes that marriage is between a man and a woman, but because it is basically the law of the land, according to the Supreme Court and blah, blah, blah. Wait a minute. Actually, it's not. If it's overturned, that's the whole point. It's not the law of the land. If it's overturned, this bill goes beyond what the decision at the Supreme Court is. This is a contingency for that. That's the entire point. So his excuse is moot.
And you asked the question in a different way than I was approaching it. But I think you said how can the federal government dictate that marriage must be recognized?
Right.
If a state says we don't wish to recognize any marriages.
Right.
Well, you recognize. You must recognize. What do you mean recognize? We don't recognize any marriages.
We're not in the marriage business at all.
Do whatever you want.
Right. Marriage doesn't play into it at all in this state.
If it isn't, if gay marriage isn't something under the Constitution, then doesn't the state get to completely decide it? Or can the government through a law come in and dictate? And what would the penalty be for a state? Can a state, if you sit there and say, why, if a state says, look, we don't recognize any marriage at all. We're getting out of the marriage business. Do whatever
right,
you want.
Right.
Church will do it, whatever. That's the license that that you have. But for the reasons distributing your assets,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
after a you know, after a marriage, mm-hmm, we'll use you know, we'll use the law on the common law marriage, whatever.
Ah, wait a minute. Okay, you touched on something. This is a great example. There are different divorce laws in different states.
Yes. Oh, good point. I didn't even think of I was just covering it surface level, just so everybody understands. This just became an issue here. In fact, I woke up and saw it.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you,
yeah,
and I,
yeah,
you and yeah, I are going right over this for the exact first time on it.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yep,
there are certain things we're going to, and that's one thing we love to do on the show.
I love doing that.
Is when
yeah,
something comes out, it's like you and I are, you know, we're asking more questions than actual statements.
Right, right.
Being that this is what we would do to the lawyers, mm-hmm, if they brought this up about whether it's constitutional or not. And so there are serious questions involved here, but that's a great point. There are different divorce. Do all divorce laws, if marriage must fully be recognized as the same, then why shouldn't all divorce laws be regulated by the federal government? Oh, that's a
right,
good one.
There,
I'm trying to think of a weakness in your argument.
There are different state laws when it comes to even just legal separation. Certain states have it, others don't. Then you get into alimony. You get into, separating or common law marriage. And all of those things come into play here.
Right. In Texas, it's always the woman's fault.
Well, because
divorce clause.
Exactly. And right now in Florida with certain NFL players. But I'm not going to Tom Brady mention any names. But the whole thing is where do you, because we, and my point and my question during the pre-show meeting is, we have different standards in different states. And you may say, well, that only deals with the property and what's going to happen with the property. No, those are all standards for a reason. And yeah, there's similarities, but there are also key differences. And so when you look at that, and, you know, because during the whole thing with the gay marriage ruling, you know, there was the whole thing is love is love. Yeah, but love has nothing to do with marriage. Marriage has nothing to do with love. Until you stand before, and this is what, again, going back to what you said, because you can be in love and not be married.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn.
Mm-hmm.
You can, and that's, my gosh, they've been together for like almost 80 years. I have a friend who's actually close friends with them, and I hope I don't hear back on that one. I like them both very much.
Yes, so do
but
I.
Those are the standards we have. And, you know, I mean, their state of residence or whatever, if let's say, and I hope this never happens, that they split up and it's, you know, one wants to claim, well, wait, this is a common law marriage and everybody knows it and it played out in front of cameras and sometimes on the screen and everything else and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we want to, well, you have to recognize that there are going to be different standards in different states. And we're okay with that, except, no, we want you to. But why?
Why?
We've decided we're not going to be in it. Right. Or we've decided that that's not going to happen here. You can go get married in another state, but we don't have to recognize it. And how does the federal government get to force a right state to recognize something when Are they going to rec- because this gets back to exactly where you started. Then that means basically the federal government can force all states to treat everybody equally. Oh, please, let's have that discussion. Because if that's what we want to do, let's line it out. You and I have a list that goes back several years, starting with what you mentioned, taxes. There are a number of things where we have different standards on different levels in different states.
That make it completely unfair. There's no reason that somebody who decides to work 80 hours a week because they want to be much more secure in life, and they put that effort in, because we're talking about morality here.
Yep.
I'm going to work my butt off. I'm going to work 80 hours a week. I'm going to save money. I'm never going to be a burden on the government. Everything that you want, why should that person be penalized more?
Right.
We've always used that as an example.
If we're going to do loan forgiveness, everybody gets loan forgiveness,
right?
And you can apply that $10,000 or $20,000 to whatever loan you got.
Right. Actually, it's discriminatory for the government to do. Oh, I love this. It's actually discriminatory for the government just to do college loan forgiveness.
That's right.
Under the 14th Amendment, as now read by liberals, that would be unconstitutional. Everybody should get loan forgiveness. We should forgive everybody's loans, including the government's.
Right. Yeah, exactly. $31 trillion. We believe we can do that through executive order.
Just print the money.
Just print the
money. Print the money and pay it off.
Yeah. Well, they certainly have been ignoring it, so they're kind of halfway there.
We got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold temperatures and water can lead to only one outcome, and ice has no place in a truck's air system. That's why it's crucial to keep your air system moisture-free as the temperatures begin to drop. One of the simplest and most cost-effective ways to keep moisture out of your air system is to change your air dryer desiccant cartridge. This should be changed as recommended by the manufacturer or annually as part of your preventive maintenance routine and preparation for winter. Make sure your air system is in top condition before plunging temperatures put it to the test.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. The GOP takes the House, but does the House need remodeling? We'll get to that. This is really interesting. The Senate voted yesterday to end the I didn't even know this. This appeared nowhere. I happened to see it. The Wall Street Journal had it in their editorial. Mm. I didn't see this story anywhere. It might have been somewhere, but it was 10 pages deep. But the Senate actually voted to end the COVID emergency.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, right. It's like, whoa. And that's the whole justification for the student loan transfer program, which the White House has hinted they're going to expand even past December again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So we will get, not the transfer, but the payment deferment. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we'll get to that. Now what for Trump? A lot of people, that's really was one of the biggest stories yesterday was, what does he do now? There's 8-9 months. Everybody knows where he stands. Everybody knows what his arguments are. Everybody knows who he is. Well, what does he do over the next 8 to 9 months?
Well, and that's it. And you know, or does he care? Is this a DOJ preemptive move?
Yep. The Pennsylvania House votes to impeach the DA who won't do his job.
Yeah,
we'll get to that. Elon Musk accused of starving employees.
Yeah. Did you see that breakdown, though, of the free meals?
The free, yeah.
$400 per, because nobody was in the office. It was $400 per meal.
Wow.
Because nobody was in the office. That's what they were wasting. That's part of that huge money drain.
on your smart speaker, say, "Play Red Eye Radio." And if you're really nice, she might. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, if you would like to get in to the show today, we would love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this story. And on Wednesday afternoon, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives voted to impeach the Philadelphia District Attorney, Larry Krasner. The resolution states that he engaged in misbehavior in office in the nature of dereliction of duty and refusal to enforce the law, as well as misbehavior in the nature of obstruction of House Select Committee investigations. It also states that he engaged in misbehavior in office in the nature of violations of the rules of professional conduct and the code of judicial conduct, specifically Rule 3.3, candor towards the tribunal, Rule 8.4, professional misconduct, and Canon 2 of the code of judicial conduct, impropriety and appearance of impropriety in the matter, and they give the actual case of the precedent, as well as another court case that's precedent. So, engage in misbehavior in office in the nature of violation of victims' rights, misbehavior in office in the nature of violence of the Constitution of the Pennsylvania by not following the laws. The legislation notes that upon assuming office, he fired more than 30 district attorneys, assistant district attorneys, of which many were senior-level associates and had significant prosecutor experience and knowledge of criminal procedure. It goes on to state that he replaced these people with assistant district attorneys that lacked any meaningful experience in prosecuting criminal cases, some of whom only recently graduated from law school, and just goes on and on and on and on. Now, this is the DA that says, sorry, not going to enforce the law.
Yeah.
And so, you know, will there be, you know, consequences there? We will see what will happen there. Mm-hmm. You know, now that we look at it, now that the House, you know, is the Republicans, and the last I saw projection was 222 to 213, exactly what it is now for Democrats.
Hmm.
The last projection that I saw. So the Republicans are expected to, at least by some analysis, to gain another four seats.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And the Democrats would gain another three of the ones that are left at you know, at this point. So you look at it now, and we're set for the next, you know, 2 years. I mean, the only thing left is the special election, but they still have the Senate.
Yeah. Right.
And what difference will it make? We will see. In fact, let me just look very quickly, see if there is any polls that have been no poll. Why are there no polls on that race, a Georgia race?
I don't know.
I just looked at Real Clear Politics.
You would think that one would be done, or maybe it was done over the weekend, and we won't see it until, well, we're, you know, into Thursday now. So you would think the weekend after the election, it was called as a runoff before the weekend, right? When was it called as a runoff? Was it Thursday?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
A couple of days after, I think.
Yeah.
Well, somebody would have done polling Monday or Tuesday.
One or two day polls.
Yep. Yeah. And then again, they may look at it and say, look, it doesn't matter. It does matter because it does make it easier if Warnock wins for the Democrats to do some things because they need one less vote.
Right. Yep.
If they have one more vote. But then you heard the I love that Schumer saying that McConnell and I have the exact same ideas of what the what the Republican Party should be.
Mm.
I'm like, oh my God.
These days.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Let's be honest, that's not true. And I'm like, wow, Schumer's trolling big time by saying that. Look, there, you know, we're not happy with Mitch McConnell over the. There are some things that made us happy when he did, you know, with the Supreme Court justices. You have to give that completely to McConnell. But we believe it's time for it's not going to not going to happen because he was voted in as a minority leader. There were 10 people that objected to it.
Yeah.
As the Wall Street Journal pointed out, they said, you know, some of the people that object to, you know, Josh Hawley, for example, it's like, you know, Josh Hawley's talking about the fact that the Republican Party needs to change. They need to change. He was one of the biggest stop the steal senators.
It's like
you're one of the reasons, as well as they pointed out, they go, you're one of the reasons McConnell isn't majority leader.
Yeah. I'd like to see the breakdown of those 10 and the one senator who abstained. I want to see who that. I'm just always curious, the breakdown of that. But sorry to Rick Scott. I mean, the thing was is that when that story came out the other day, it was like, okay, it was a yawner, you know? And yeah. I just didn't think that Rick Scott was going to have any momentum at all.
As much as I would like to see new leadership, I'm not going to go. I think it's a leap to say that Schumer and McConnell want the exact same from the GOP.
Okay, you can say that if you like.
I can? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Feel free to say that if you like. Go right ahead. It's a free country. At my point,
and
leadership in the Senate, there's so much work to be done.
That was funny because I wasn't sure when you said who you were directing that at, Schumer or me. And then when I realized you were directing it at me, it made it even more funny.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Say it. As much as you want. But it's like saying that, well, we need to, the problem with the House is that, you know, we need to paint the front door. And you've got the roof coming off and, you know, all the plumbing is broke. And, you know, that. So because the question was the other day, and it still is. All right. Let's just say Mitch McConnell retires. Right. Who right now is that person to lead?
You and I had this discussion a couple of times, and we can't tell you who that is.
I don't know who that is right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not good.
Now, I will say this, because I'd mentioned National Review before.
Yeah.
National Review said, look, the job of the minorities in the Senate right now is to just say no to the Democrats. And I went, then you and I yesterday had said, how about Rand Paul?
Yeah, right.
Was it Dr. No or Mr. No? What did they call him?
Yeah.
Was it Dr. No? He says no to everything. Yeah. I'm like, well, maybe the Rand.
I think his dad was Dr. No, but was, Dr. Okay. No Jr. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Dr. No Jr. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was like, oh, well, when I saw that article, it's like their only job is to say no. It's not to compromise or help the Biden administration with anything. Now, I'll say this. One thing that bothered me yesterday was when McConnell said, oh, yeah, we did cooperate and get some things done, like infrastructure.
Yeah, right. By the way, now I've got to check it and see if the one senator who abstained was Rand Paul.
I'm not even participating in this.
Like, nah.
Yeah, but when McConnell said to me, that irked the daylights out of me.
Yeah.
When he said, we got infrastructure done.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah,
just
get out.
Stop it.
Get out. Seriously.
So your criticism of me might be legit.
I just have zero confidence.
Well, I'm like Lindsey Graham today.
Yeah.
No. I'm all over the place.
You know, that's the thing is that, you know, and Lindsey Graham's actually a perfect example to introduce into the conversation because, you know, I called it the reawakening of Lindsey Graham during the whole Kavanaugh thing, you know? And it led to him being the chair eventually of the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, which I thought at that time was a good move. But, you know, do you have anything over there that you could throw at me that would hurt? Because here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to borrow Mitt Romney's analogy.
Yeah, I have the stapler here.
I could throw my stapler, but you would have to return it. He was talking about Trump, referring to Trump, and saying, well, you know, it's like having a pitcher on the mound who has passed his prime, and if you want to get the game, you want to win the game, you got to remove the pitcher and put a new pitcher on the mound. Well, there were a number of things there that you and I picked apart both on and off the air on that and its analogy on Trump. I would say, you know, it can often be the case in the GOP. I mean, you know, you and I can compartmentalize the left, and we do that. But with the GOP, I look at it as kind of the same. I mean, I think Lindsey Graham was very useful in that moment. I think Mitch McConnell was very useful, as we mentioned, a number of things that he helped to get done. Those wouldn't have gotten done without Mitch McConnell being able to bring it together. Could somebody else have brought it together in the Senate? You can make that case, but it wasn't the case, so we'll never know.
Well, I don't want to be, you know, telling you what I believe you're saying, but what I believe you're saying is there is no one that's 100% right or 100% wrong. Everything is a mixed bag, but you look at it and you say, what do I need for the future? Anybody who is fired in the job, nobody does 100% wrong. They may do 10% wrong, which is enough to get them fired and moved on, you know, to something else. It's like, as we've talked about with Trump, Trump was not 100% right, and he wasn't 100% wrong.
Right.
It's somewhere in the middle, and most people understand that, but it comes down to, all right, is this the person to lead the movement forward? So sometimes we get, not us, but sometimes it seems like in the media and popular culture, there's this absolute, you know, black and white, 100% wrong, 100% right.
Right. Well, or always right and right for every occasion.
Right.
And right on everything. And they'll be right on things that haven't happened yet. Just wait and see. That's idolatry.
Yeah.
You know?
And so.
And those are the things that, you know, so I would say that there are sometimes when it's like, all right, this player is going to be good for this. At this moment, this player is right for this occasion and can get that done. This gets back to the, you know, the reason that we talk about, the reason that we vote. We send people there to do our bidding. And when it looks like they're not willing to do our bidding, I mean, you know, because lately Mitch McConnell essentially has been, you know, laying down. So you got a pitcher on the mound who's laying down. You know, I mean, you got a player who's, for whatever reason, not getting it done on a couple of items, a number of items, handful of items. Mm-hmm. We can go back and say, all right, good.
Got it done. Right.
But it's not. And here's the thing. It's because when you back away from it, it's not about the people. It's about the ideas. The people have to implement the ideas. So that's where you have to put the right people in and you have to trust that they're going to do that. But even the people that you vote for and support, if they do something wrong, it's absolutely okay, I think, imperative. I think it's actually our duty to criticize them and be thoughtful about it and say, this is why I disagree with what they're doing or what they're saying, you know? And again, it's not personal, but I look at the Senate right now and okay, Mitch McConnell, I expected him to get the vote. Not much is going to change for now.
And if Rick Scott got it, Not much was going to change. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. Why would it be so hard for Republicans to just get together on the four or five major issues, say, look, we don't really have any power for the next 2 years? And they don't.
Right.
They don't have any power really to do anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just all unite on those four or five issues that you and I have talked about? You know, energy security.
Yeah.
The border.
Yep.
Crime.
Yep.
And we focus
on the economy.
The economy. Yeah, yeah. We focus on those.
Yep.
Well, when I meant oil, I meant energy. I meant the economy that way. But yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, it doesn't seem to be that hard to unify over the next 2 years, does it?
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howes Products. Visit HowesProducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. If you can't listen to one of our great radio station affiliates overnight live, you can listen on your smartphone and your smart speakers when and where you want. An exclusive presentation of Red Eye Radio.
Rebroadcast is strictly prohibited unless you're rebroadcasting to yourself through your app on your phone and sharing it with friends on social. Forget that part, that whole lawyer thing. Share it as much as you like.
Yeah, our lawyers don't care. What?
Yeah. Huh? Who?
Put it wherever you want.
Yeah,
somebody's listening. Cool.
Whatever. That's great. Yeah. No, right. Share it. You know what? It makes a great gift.
I'm sitting here. I've got all the polls in front of me here. Not that I want to make a big deal out of it because it's really early on. But we just said we would look at the polls. Since the election day between Biden and DeSantis, because Trump and DeSantis, because it's of great interest to people. You know, where are they going? I'm looking at this interactive poll, and this is the Democrat pollster that did 1,000 registered voters. Jeez, this is going. For 2024, the first polls for 2024 are out.
Yeah, we can't get one for December 6th, but we're already getting them for 2024. What does 2028 look like?
Ron DeSantis, 49, Biden, 45. Trump versus Biden, Trump, 48, Biden, 46. Plus 4 for DeSantis, plus 2 for Biden.
Okay, all right.
Okay. So the ISPIS poll came out. One of the lowest numbers ever for Biden approval from that poll, 57-37.
All right.
I wonder if the polls will start tanking now, because you and I have for the longest time have been looking at the civics poll that had Trump, that had Biden. I mean, Biden
was 52-39 for like a couple of months.
Right.
I think it still was the other day when I checked it. And right now it's 53-39. It just it's budged like 1 or 2 points.
But that isn't even the point. The point is the fact that at one point Biden was -28, and all of a sudden he's -13. And there was a movement in the last 6 months of 15 points. We never bought into that. That was just too wide of a disparity. And if you look, for example, you can go back and look at Trump and Obama. You don't see any of those type of disparities to that kind of level. And so we've always wondered, okay, what's really going on? You know, in that particular poll. But I wonder if now that he's a lame duck and now all he's going to be out there doing is ranting and raving every day, he can't get anything done. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a student loan. What's he going to give away now as the executive branch? And now that this is the other thing, too. Now that the House is Republican, and remember, where does legislation and where do the purse strings come from?
the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
So they can sue now because it's Republican. Like the student loan program, they can the Republicans will sue.
Yeah.
Say, wait a minute, you can't take this away from us because the Republican Party will say the House has been – the Democrats wouldn't do it because they had the House.
Right.
Now Republicans have it and say, wait a minute, you can't do that. We're damaged. We're the House of Representatives. You can't spend money. Only we can.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, okay. So Biden is completely over the next 2 years. There's nothing he really can do.
Yep.
You know, there's really going to be no movement on anything whatsoever. And he is not going to get better in his whatever his cognitive state, which is not the cognitive state of the average person. It's not. We all know that. It's only going to get worse. We're in for a couple of interesting years. So that was the so that's what was there. The latest poll, YouGov poll. Who would you see? YouGov America and the Economist poll. Who would Trump or DeSantis 2024? Who would you rather see as a Republican nominee for president 2024? DeSantis 46, Trump 39. Independents had DeSantis 34%, Trump 21%. So I guess they asked. No, it was just between the two, and the rest were not sure. Now this is interesting because there was another YouGov poll. Ron DeSantis has marked 18 points up over Donald Trump in a hypothetical GOP primary, a Wednesday Economist YouGov poll said. When the poll asked conservative respondents, okay, so it didn't ask, it wasn't, it was just conservative. See, this is where Breitbart, this is where the headline is not accurate. Ron DeSantis up 18 points over Donald Trump in a hypothetical GOP primary. Well, what they say then is, because then you look at it and you say, well, no, it was actually DeSantis 46, Trump 39. They go, when the poll asked conservative respondents, if you had to choose, 51% chose DeSantis, 33% selected Trump, 17% were unsure. Among Americans, DeSantis leads Trump by 7 points, 46 to 39.
Hmm.
The governor also leads by independents. So that's the problem there. That when you say conservatives, that's not even Republicans.
Right, yeah.
So, but as we've said, there has been the momentum. You know, there was one poll that showed Trump was still up by like 11 or something like that. But that's the only poll. Every other poll has shown that there's been a major shift. And that's what you look at, not whether it's precise, but where the momentum is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as we now see, I think that what we see right now in the generic congressional poll, you know, that was, you know, that had come out, the number of those that had come out, the actual number was about a little over 4% for Republicans.
Mm.
Which actually is in line with many of the polls.
Yeah.
As to what the actual popular vote would be. It's where, you know, that was. So the polls, when it came to the generic congressional ballot, some of them, and I don't have it here. Let me just, I can go back and check here very quickly here. The generic congressional ballot to see. Trafalgar, +5, Data for Progress, their last generic congressional poll, +5, +4. It's a little bit over 4. And then you had Rasmussen, +5. So that was close.
Hmm.
You had CNN's last one, +4. Quinnipiac was +4. You had some that were more, I mean, Politico, morning, Politico was at +5, but still within 1 point of a margin of error. NBC News, +1, that was off. But there were a lot of plus fours in there if you look at it. So a lot of the polls on the generic congressional vote, the last ones were actually accurate when it came to popular voting.
Yeah, where it's landing now. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, and the RCP average from the middle of October to Election Day was Republicans 2.5. That was the average of all the polls, adding in, for example, the plus ones and the plus twos and things that were in there. But there were plenty of posters that were at 4.
Yeah. Right.
You know, 4 and 5, which is within 1. So, again, the polls weren't completely off. They had it right. It's the history of generally what happens that didn't match the polling.
Right, right. Yeah. And you look at the breakdown of, you know, the houses or the house seats. You know, by the way, I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny that the liberal media had to make the call on the House going to the Republicans from a California seat. Garcia, California, yeah. 27, which is interesting, by the way. Yesterday about this time, I forget who it was. It wasn't Fox News, but somebody called it for Garcia, but nobody else had. And I mentioned that during the show yesterday, but of course it was called late in the day on Wednesday. And then that that gave the House to the GOP. But when you look at the generic poll, because I guess I would ask about the minutia of the methodology, because yeah, it landed pretty close to a number of pollsters, right? 4 or 5 points percentage. If it turns out that the GOP gets 222, and that the Democrats get 213. So that would be pretty close. But is that, you know, again, are we talking sentiment, or is there actual methodology in that generic polling by any of them, by any of the pollsters, that broke it down and you know, measured districts in, you know, a more intimate way, and breaking down the precincts within districts and everything else? And I don't know. I haven't seen that methodology put forward, so I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the question I would have. You know, and also we joke about the 24 polls coming out of, you know, I would be if the election were held today. Yeah, but it's not going to be held today. But the sentiment you gauge between, okay, if it's Biden versus Trump, or if it's Biden versus DeSantis, or if Trump converts to a Democrat, I want to see that poll, DeSantis versus Trump. just throw it in.
Unbelievable.
And I would want to know, too, about, you know, long term, about what kind of methodology change there might be with those pollsters. I'm really curious to know it, you know, how many of them are looking to not just tweak it, but change a number of things about their methodology. And I think it goes to people's sensibilities, technology, and everything else plays into it. I'm not going to pretend that it's an easy job, but as I mentioned before, there are pollsters that have, over the last, 2016, 2018, 2020, and now 2022, there are, you know, a few pollsters in terms of their accuracy that rank near the bottom consistently. And I would think to myself, well, unless it's about agenda, wouldn't you be worried about accuracy? So, you know, apparently nothing has changed. Would it change now? And that's the whole thing, too. Because you look at it and say, all right, a number of things didn't go the way that people expected. And keep in mind, that included many on the left in the weekend before Election Day. It was pretty much, yeah, it looks like they could even get the Senate. And then all of a sudden that didn't happen. And the big, you know, red drip turned up and the red wave didn't. And so my point being is that with, even if you've got, you know, agenda, even if it's about agenda with some of the pollsters, wouldn't you want to gauge that properly in order, you know, to, if the Democrats are faring better, in order to demonstrate that ahead of the election? Well, do they feel burned as a result?
Well, the thing is, though, because when you do the national congressional ballot, you're looking at history, and to do every single state, and that would be quite expensive.
That'd be very, very expensive
to do that. But you need somebody to pay for it. What they do is they just look at the overall. We're going to poll the entire nation. What is it? Okay.
What does history show?
I don't think it doesn't go into every district.
But there are algorithms that are built on that history. And that's what the methodology is, I guess, is my point. And so is it spot on? Are certain things never going to be different that history is going to show that this is pretty much the way it's going to go?
The algorithms can't take into effect the fact that 30 years ago people had home phones and no cell phones.
Sure, there's a number of things, but they are also, as we've talked about, in fact, mentioned before the election, there are things also that don't change.
Yeah.
And what drives people, like the economy, you know, and or high crime, except in New York City. You know, these are things that you can gauge historically are accurate.
But I'll tell you one thing it couldn't read. The number of people, for example, that came out, even though New York did not go, for the governor, mm-hmm. they flipped congressional seats mm-hmm. in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really didn't, didn't really see that coming.
My point on the generic congressional polling, was there any algorithm element along the way that could have predicted that?
Yeah,
and
know.
So, again, was it just coincidence that they ended up close? I guess is my ultimate question.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on transport security. Each year, thousands of drivers are injured and millions of dollars are lost in thefts and robberies. The key to staying safe is recognizing and avoiding potentially harmful situations before they occur. Well-thought-out trip planning and communication between the carrier and the shipper can assist in recognizing and avoiding these potentially harmful situations. Before getting started each day, have a plan in place. Take time to map out 2 or 3 safe locations for each rest or refueling stop. Also, make note of other locations where it is safe to pull off in case you need to stop unexpectedly or your first choices are unavailable. Communication between the carrier and shipper is also essential. Both parties should be aware of who is picking up a load, including the name of the driver, as well as the carrier-assigned identification numbers of the tractor and trailer. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's head to John in Illinois. John, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, John.
Hi. Thank you very much. My comment was, I think Biden's staff is elated that Trump is running. And my thoughts on this are, number one, I don't think Trump can beat Biden one-on-one. There are just too many anti-Trumpers. You could have Elmer Fudd running against Trump, and they'd vote for Elmer Fudd. They just hate him so much. Number two, if he does not get the nomination, I'm sure he will run as a third party, and he will siphon off votes from DeSantis or whomever is the nominee. And I did vote for Trump in the last two elections, but this time around I would prefer DeSantis or possibly another candidate. I just don't think Trump can win.
So you talked about going third party. I think there's a chance that he would do that. I think there would be a calling for him to do that by his base, however big that or small that is.
That would siphon off.
I guess the question is
votes.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question is, how big is that really now? after last Tuesday, or can it be rebuilt along the way for him to be the spoiler? Or has DeSantis got enough momentum, you know, to overcome something like that?
And it's a good question. We'll address more of it coming up following the bottom of the hour. I just want to make note, though, that, you know, let's not discount Elmer Fudd.
Yeah.
He was a hunter, very pro-Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. He was. Definitely. I think he'd get the Ted Nugent endorsement.
Very self-sufficient.
Yep. Yep. Yes.
Didn't rely on anybody else.
Yep. Right.
Had a speaking disability and overcame it.
Yes. He was very successful. Yes. I mean, he never got the rabbit, but otherwise.
If you missed what they just said, it'll be on our app and website to hear later this morning. RedEyeRadioShow.com.
And he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. 86690 Red Eye. We'll probably get some email on that. So you guys were talking about the political viability of Elmer Fudd.
Well, in that case, if you look at it, clearly a conservative, but I think, you know, in that same era, you had a liberal in Wile E. Coyote, as we call him, Chuck Schumer, and clearly just wanted to drop anvils. That's his whole reason for existence. I think it's out of line.
You know, the last caller talking about the fact that, because this is where the last caller said, even though he voted for Trump twice, he said, I don't believe he could beat Elmer Fudd right now. And so I don't think he can beat, Biden. And again, you're looking forward 2 years from now. I can tell you, right now, and based on what has happened over the last week, based on history, based on the general movement of the polls, Trump is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is not in as much trouble if DeSantis decides not to run. The fact is, though, when negatives build up in politics, the only thing I can relate it to is when people idolize a quarterback and the quarterback doesn't perform. We've all seen that with whatever our favorite football team is. Even New England's seen it now.
Yeah, sure.
There's all these, this is the guy, this is the guy, this is the guy, this is the guy, this is the guy. Everybody jumps behind, and they'll stick with him for a couple of games, and then there comes to a point where it's like, we need someone else. So once that starts happening, and there is a succession of losses, it's just human nature, and if anything, I think mirrors human nature. It's politics and sports. But once you are viewed as not being able to win or your influence does not work anymore, and that's exactly what's going on here, you're in trouble. And so when you see that Trump now has months upon months upon months upon months before anybody announces that they're running, what happens? You know, what happens in that case? You and I asked this question. What happens if he's indicted? If he was indicted before the election, I think it would have rallied people around him.
Yeah.
The thing I get most in the national polls, the polling, the focus groups, everything I've seen mirrors exactly all of my acquaintances and friends who voted for Trump twice, not just once, but twice.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I could relate it, and we talked about this the other day, is when you get a divorce, but you still love your ex.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see all the positive in there. You can look back and say, we weren't compatible. There was so much good that you did in my life. There was so much good that you did for me.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not compatible anymore. It's that simple. It's not complicated, I think, in the human psyche as to, you know, how we view things.
And or even more directly, since they work for us, you got a CEO that did great things for the company. And now it's gone the other direction. And the company wouldn't be where it is today without that CEO, but you still have to switch CEOs.
Right. And I think that I'm not talking about you and I, how we view things, mm-hmm. because a lot of my friends were, you and I are more like the op-ed piece we read from Kurt Schlichter the other day.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't practice political idolatry. We just don't at all. I don't care. I don't fall in love with the person. I don't know the person. Anybody who is a politician simply works for me to move the agenda that I wish to move forward. Now, I can like them, and I can look and say, yeah, they've done great things in their life. I don't know them. I don't have a personal attachment to them. I can still like a politician and not wish to vote for them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't this, I must like them, and then therefore if I like them, I must vote for them. And now I don't like them, so I won't vote for them. It's about whether they are viable candidates and whether they can move the agenda forward. And yes, like most people, is this the kind of person that I wish to vote for?
Mm.
So all those aspects come into it. But there really is no political idolatry. They are, as you know, we read Schlichter's column the other day, they are our civil servants. And I want to find, because I just want to read a couple of paragraphs, because this is how he wrote it. And this is more, not exactly, but this is more how I feel. And he says, and he goes through the thing that, look, it's not just Trump's fault. And that's the other thing that you get out there. Well, it's not just Trump's fault. Yeah, it is. But if the quarterback isn't performing and the wide receiver isn't performing, you let both go. He says, but Trump presents problems and we need to face them. Before we go further, we need to be clear, because some folks are a bit sensitive when the subject of Trump comes up. Get over it. He works for us. We owe Trump nothing. He's a politician. He owes us. I don't care if he resents his unfair 2020 defeat any more than I care when a teenager wishes that something is unfair. Life is unfair. No one was more unfairly maligned than Donald J. Trump. I wrote a book defending him against the barrage of lies that he endured. But I expect politicians to get it done every time and every day with no excuses. And the operative question is always, always, what have you done for me today? Hmm. If a politician wants a friend, he can buy a dog. And if he demands a pass when he starts to fail to cut it, here's a gold watch and a handshake. Enjoy your retirement. Trump was a great president in many ways. The economy boomed. We were energy independent. We were at peace. He got the Middle East to make peace. And the Supreme Court, no establishment guy would have stuck with Kavanaugh as Trump did. Sometimes, someday, some historian is going to look back and say, damn, I can't believe how much Trump accomplished in the face of a full-scale assault by the establishment. He saved America, or at least he put off our fall a little bit longer. But let's not minimize his failures in failing to win this last midterm. And they are failures, and they are just more in a line of them. He postures as the head of the GOP, and congratulations, Don. That means you get the blame when stuff goes sideways, just like you get the credit when you win. In 2018, we lost seats, a lot of them. He gets a big piece of that demerit. In 2020, he lost the election. Yeah, I know all about the rigging issues because I lawyered in the aftermath. But the fact is that crusty O'Senile, apparently that's what he calls Biden, is in the Oval Office and Trump isn't, so Trump lost. And in 2022, well, we're still mopping up that mess. No, it's not all of his fault, but some of the fault was his. He picked some candidates who either lost
or ran far behind what they should have gotten. He collected a ton of money and then spent barely any of it. He injected the dumb drama into the election by hinting that he would announce the night before, issuing stupid nicknames for Ron DeSantis while we were busy trying to win, and he did not slack off even after the disappointing loss. His cringe insecurity about DeSantis, and he should be insecure, is embarrassing. All that stuff hurt us in the midterm, and his rumblings afterwards about how great he did with his picks were tone deaf and infuriating. He can be exhausting, I know, because many people tell me they're tired of the Trump drama. That's a fact, like it or not. And then he goes into the people that, you know, the different demographics of, you know, who likes Donald Trump and, you know, who doesn't like, you know, Donald Trump. As we did, remember when we talked after the election, a couple months after the election in 2016, and went through, what do we have, like eight, I think it was like eight demographics that we believe voted for Trump. He says, the only question that matters to us, this is sort of the conclusion, the only question that matters to us conservatives is whether we are better off with Donald Trump as a candidate or whether we are not. While he has not said it, some people worry he might go third party if denied the nod. I doubt it, not least of all because, and this would be my argument to the my debate point to the last caller, I doubt it, not least of all because he would have to personally fund it. But some Trump diehards promise to sit out the election if their guy cannot win the primary. They often cannot imagine he can ever lose and attribute all of his failures to establishment conspiracies and cheating, though cheating is kind of baked in by now. And if Trump cannot overcome it in the primary, good luck of doing it in the general. We need to decide whether we think the people threatening to take their ball and go home outnumber the people who might be gettable by a different Republican nominee. And there you go. So, you know, that's, again, that is how a number of people think. That is the part about, look, I don't care. I have no political idolatry. I wish you well. But can you win? That's what I care. Can you move what I want to move forward? I have no personal. I don't look and say I personally like him, therefore he must be my nominee. I don't do it for Trump. I didn't do it for Bush. I didn't do it for any politician that I've ever voted for in my entire life. And so some people do. Political idolatry. We saw it to the max with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to the max, nobody got the political idolatry like Obama because none of it was based on the substance of where he wished to take us on the issues. Trump, the political idolatry for Trump, came from the belief that he was going to be serious about a set of issues that politicians talked about but never really were serious to solve.
Well, and I wonder if that standard measurement to what you just mentioned. I don't know. I think it's ever evolving, but honestly, how does it change now? You know, after this midterm, you know, the whole soul searching thing. It really gets down to what your constituents, your supporters are asking you to get done. And there are, we talked about the difference between, you know, reality and the abstract. And many of these political promises, especially for newcomers or people not holding office right now, so you're not the incumbent, you're going to make a promise, and that is technically in the abstract. I will work to get these things done. It's something that will happen down the road. But you have to you're going to have to address the reality of the issues today. The Republican Party, you mentioned it earlier, they're going to have to get together and they're going to have a message in the next 2 years. And I said it a couple of weeks ago. This has to be your game for 2 years, building 24. Because there are 10 Senate seats on the GOP side up in 24, but there are some on the left, a number of them, that could be flipped, can be flipped. And you have to work in building that message for that reason, maintaining the House, and then, of course, the big reason, getting the White House. But you've got to be clear about that message. You can't sit on your butt and believe you're going to get by because you don't have any momentum after last Tuesday. That message has to be every day. It has to be worked every single day. Let's see if they'll do it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Saw that Target, we'll get to the story coming up following the top of the hour, Target warns of a soft holiday quarter as profits tumble and sales slow. You know, remember a couple of years ago when the big story was, are the stores going to close? The stores need to be closed. Remember the stories that nobody even cares about now? That, you know, back then that stores, they need to close on Thanksgiving. They need to close. They open up too long on Black Friday, whatever, and they should never open on Thanksgiving. Now it's like you have companies, and I haven't heard many lately, but a month ago it was like a bunch of them came out and said, we're not going to be open Thanksgiving. It's like, man, because you can't find the staff.
I saw McDonald's. I drove by the other day, and they had a big sign. I could see it from the street. We will be open Thanksgiving Day. And I thought,
wow.
All right. Okay. You know, and that particular McDonald's has been in my neighborhood. You know, it's been there since longer than I've lived there, better part of 30 years. I think they've been closed every Thanksgiving Day. Maybe that's why they put up a big sign, but they'll be open.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and you can listen to our show whenever you want if you can't listen to us live.
Yeah.
All right, where's the... I had one article I wanted to find.
Yeah?
That was talking about... okay, it was about one Democrat that said, we need to do something about spending. I'm like, oh, really? Like one Democrat...
Were they drunk?
Somebody who was elected to Congress as a Democrat.
Mm. Wow. Were they drunk?
I don't know. But when we're thinking about, you know, this whole thing, the infighting going on with the Republican Party about who's going to be leader, whatever. I think that when all the new, well, right now that the leadership of the Republican Party, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, here's what you do to win. In 2024. And it's extremely simple.
Get more votes than the opposition.
And you don't alienate really anybody in Congress. You bring everybody in. Everybody who's been elected, everybody that's been. The Senate does it. The House does it. They bring everybody in and they say, this is our plan. And our plan is very simple. We're taking the things that all of us agree on, and that's what we're going to push over the next 2 years. The political reality is there isn't much we can get done because the Senate and the president, especially the president, can stop everything. So the only thing we can do is set a plan about what we wish to do. Because one of the weaknesses in the perception of the Republican Party is that you were against what the Democrats were doing, but you didn't tell us what you would do differently.
Right. As we said, leading up to the election, people want to hear solutions.
Right. Now, the solutions are easy. I mean, it's, the solutions have been out there, and it's not like the Republicans weren't talking about them. But you have to market every single day. You and I talked about during the Obama administration, the thing they talked about every single day. Every single day, every issue was climate change or race.
Yeah.
To the point where you knew, okay, it's a Democrat, climate change or race. Well, those were the talking points of the day.
Right.
Climate change and race, climate change and race, climate change and race. And as we know, still, a great deal of the discussion from Democrats is climate change and race and the end of democracy. But if you've been paying attention on every single major issue of concerns to Americans personally about their quality of the life, they favor Democrats, or they favor Republicans, excuse me. And that's where you go. It's that simple. That's where you go. Yep. That's where you go from now on. Trump is not a part of anything that's going on now. Trump does not hold political office.
Yep. Say what you will about the gay marriage bill in the Senate, but this is the reality. The Democrats will get the victory. The 12 Republicans in the Senate, and we'll see where that was a procedural vote yesterday, and we'll see where the final vote comes out. After it was official that they're going to keep the Senate, they get this done a few days later, and it looks like it will pass the Senate. It'll go back to the House. And
it's not an as much as you and I talk about it being an issue.
It is with the left, and that's my point. With their constituents, they get a victory. Where's the victory with the constituents, with the people on the right?
And this is where, and that's what I'm talking, after January, this is what you do after January. And you hit these issues, and they're very simple. You hit the economy, inflation. And on the economy, inflation, you talk about the fact that we need to go, that it's insane not to go after our energy reserves. Every single time, on every single Sunday morning news show, every single representative of the Republican Party talks about the exact same thing over and over again. If they ask you about a stolen election, you bring up energy. If they bring up Donald Trump, you bring up energy. Donald Trump's not part of this. We're here, Republicans. We want to get the economy better. We want to lower fuel, because especially fuel, by the time we get to January, fuel oil prices and the effect that's going to have on the population, you bring the especially those that use it, and natural gas.
And then the oncoming recession that many analysts and CEOs believe is going to happen. And, you know, that's my whole point, is that the GOP on things that are affecting everybody every day can't get a messaging across. Right. And so far, they haven't shown they can do that. Hopefully, they can in the House, and they can get this agenda, you know, out there in front of people and doing it every day. But the left gets their agenda done on things that aren't priority in people's lives.
And they're not affecting Americans every single day. So when you get in there, you get – and these are the issues. The economy – the economy, inflation, the border. Remember, they're still denying the border. You pound on it each and every day. You pound on the fentanyl. You pound on the fact that, hey, now every American probably knows somebody who's dead of fentanyl. That's because of what's going on in the border today. Now, I'm looking at it right here. You've got McCarthy. Let's make China dependent on our energy. So it shows that he is, you know, he brought that up. Graham. No deals on immigration until we secure the border. So you talk about that. You talk about the fact that we need to stop illegal immigration before we start legal immigration. You pound these things. You pound the economy, inflation, the border, crime. Then the second set of issues on the next level, critical race theory and the liberal transgender activist movement as to where they're going. But the three things that you push the most over and over again in unison, and everybody has to be together on these talking points. And then what you also do, you get these mega donors, and you get these mega donors to PACs, and you say We need to have ads that run on a consistent basis for the next 2 years. We are the Republican Party. Here's what we stand for. Here's what we'll do. And you produce ads from day one. Well, no, you know, maybe day one. I mean, day one of the when you first take over. It doesn't have to be day one, but you understand what I mean. Where you image the Republican Party as a party with these core beliefs, and you do it over and over again until you get the people to say, this is like Camp Lejeune. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But by that time, then the message is clear. The Republican Party, these political parties spend billions of dollars over the years on ineffective advertising. You let people know we're the Republican Party. Here's what we're for. These are the three main issues. And then the other issues that they're major, but they don't affect people's lives as much as the rest of the rest of the three. But right. The economy, inflation, the border, fentanyl, crime. And you pound it day in and day out for 2 years. You don't hold a meeting once and say, here's what we're for, and then everybody disappears and goes off and does their own thing. This isn't hard. The most frustrating thing for us who do this every day, and maybe for a lot of you out there too, but we do this every single day, and it gets frustrating day in and day out. And now it's been for, I don't know how many years it's been where you and I have said or go, they've got them on the issues. For God's sakes, this isn't rocket science. Promote what you believe on the issues and what you could do. And the other thing they need to do is, over the next 2 years, is they need to get a number of the senators and Congress people out there to, in a way, talk about where this nation is going and why inflation happens, and talk and say, look, we wish we could spend. You don't have to act, no, we're not going to spend. Look, we wish we could help everybody. But the inflation that you see today is caused directly by the government spending. You need to educate people about Fed policy. You need to educate people about what borrowing money has done to inflation and how it increases the inflation rate and what you need to do to solve it. You don't have to scream from the rooftop saying, you know, as we have done occasionally. You don't need, as a political party, to do that now. What you need to do in that level is an education process, and you need to do it on every single new show that you are on. And if they ask you, remember how the Democrats would be asked? Well, what do you think about the situation at the border? Well, we're for investments in society, for climate change and racism.
Yeah.
They would just ignore it.
Yep.
You pound the same thing over and over again where a landslide number of people agree with you on it. It's not hard. It's basic marketing of what it's marketing and saying, we have what you want.
This is the point from earlier. At the left, at every turn, you can't get away from it. Social media everywhere. The Democrats, their talking points are reverberated at every turn on things that don't matter. How can you not get the obvious points across in unison? And why wasn't that happening before? They need to do it now, and we can't do anything about the past. But you can learn from the past, which is to say, every turn, social media, everybody in the Republican Party, this is how inflation works. This is what happens. Boom, you put the post there, and it's everywhere, to the point that you can't get away from it. Because with the left, they're doing that on things that are in the abstract.
Democracy, climate change, and race.
Yep. Yep.
So you make it so what the Republicans stand for are as clear as what the Democrats stand for.
Yep.
Identity politics, race, climate change, mm-hmm. the end of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
That's how disciplined they were in their messaging of abstract concepts and concepts that aren't even true.
Right.
Everything that you're talking about is true and relatable to the American public. pound it in unison every single day, every single interview. If you do, you win. If you don't, you don't win.
And you don't see it even on, again, the gay marriage bill. Where is the party? Separate the 12 that voted for it, the Republicans. Where's the rest of the party in unison saying, we have some serious states' rights issues with this bill?
You don't.
You don't see it.
Everybody's on their own.
And the left, they're going to get, they get that credit for getting a bill done on something that could well be a violation of states' rights. We'll see what the final text reads of that bill. And you're not seeing any unison in the Republican Party outside of those 12. In fact, all the media focus, liberal media, of course, has been focused on those 12 and the comments by Mitt Romney. Set that aside. The party, the rest of the party, should be saying, here's why we have a problem with it.
And I understand that, but the thing I'm and there are going to be issues where the Republican Party are going to, this is my point. There's going to be issues where the Republican Party may not be in full agreement. My point is you take all those, you're not going to be able to get unison on every issue, be unison, united on every issue, but you can be on those five issues. I don't know one Republican that doesn't agree with all those, including Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
And so you pound all those issues. There are going to be disagreements, as you have right now, on things that are more abstract that don't affect people's lives. So you may not be able to get that united front. But on those five issues that hit the American public, the three major ones, and then critical race theory and the liberal transgender activist movement, you have 99.99% of Republicans that are united. You are united where you can be. That is a slam dunk.
I wouldn't know that, though, because I'm not hearing it.
No, you're not. And that's why.
That's the point.
And that's why I'm saying that's where they have to go, because yes, they're not there.
And how was that not happening during the election cycle?
Can't worry about what has not happened. As you just said, we have to worry about.
But you can learn from it. You learn also build a history and a tendency.
Yes.
And the tendency is zero. Yeah. And this is why we can't find a leader. Okay, it'll be Mitch McConnell. But we really can't find a leader in the GOP in the Senate because they don't exist. Right. Nobody's bringing that party together on
messaging. I understand the problems. I'm simply saying what they should do. I'm not saying they can. I'm not saying they can do it.
I get it.
I'm saying what they should.
Yep.
What they need to do in order to win.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
And my confidence is zero. They're going to have to earn. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You're not.
Yeah.
That's why.
It is zero.
That's why. I'm sitting here saying this should be their plan
because it hasn't
been their plan.
I'm with you.
And
it should be.
And there's no reason that I should be saying it. They should be saying it.
Record inflation for a generation. Yeah. How do you not get that done?
Look, I'll say it again. I have every confidence they'll blow this too.
That's my whole point.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. So then you talk about that would be the first step. And the second step is whoever becomes the nominee for, for the Republicans in 2024 needs to, be a part of leading that effort if they could ever get a united front, mm-hmm. to continue that united front, just like Reagan got way back then. You can go back through history and see, how political parties succeed. And if you have, because remember, the Democratic Party and Biden have all embraced their insane narrative. Mm-hmm. They've been unified behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're not going to succeed long term because the policies are insane.
But now they think it's working.
But they have been able to move it forward in their direction, at least temporarily.
Right.
Now, imagine what you could do as a political party that is united. And so there's only, you don't have to unite on every issue. There's issues you can't, but on the issues you unite, you can. The problem is, it is proven through his term, Trump cannot unite and has no interest in uniting the Republican Party. He has no interest in doing it. None. And you have to do it. Everybody has to be on the same message in order to hopefully get maximum success in not just putting forth your message, but turning that into legislation, because you've gone to the American people on these issues and said, you know, these are the important issues. We know it. This is a solution. You know it.
This is why DeSantis right now is getting the attention. After last Tuesday in Florida, there was something that was very clear, and it may be exclusive to a state. Many believe it's not. But his ability to carry the party in his state is undeniable. And that's what people want to see in leadership. You build that consensus. You build that united front. And that will also be the test for DeSantis if he becomes the nominee and then eventually becomes president. He's going to have to work the party to get his agenda done. I think Trump was able to do a number of things. We talked about corporate taxes getting to 21% and things that were good things. But you're also, there are so many things right now. The list is very, very long, and you've really got to bring the party together, and you've got to bring independents with you and everything else. So that's going to be one of the first tests for DeSantis. And the question is, does Trump have the ability to do that?
No.
Many believe he does not.
He does,
I don't
not
believe he does.
Yes, he doesn't.
Regime is in place. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So that snowstorm's supposed to really start hitting the Buffalo, New York area.
You were telling me they were already announcing road closures?
I-90 from Rochester all the way down to the Pennsylvania state line will be closed to commercial traffic at 4 p.m. tomorrow.
That would be 4 p.m. Thursday.
I'm sorry.
Thursday or Friday?
4 p.m. today.
Okay. All right. Wow. 4 p.m. Thursday.
Yeah.
All right.
So commercial traffic, so trucks,
yeah,
whatever. I mean, so that doesn't happen very often that you have, and that was yesterday, so we're talking about a full 24 hours before. There, you know, and I guess this is from the experience over the years of having massive traffic jams.
Because when
the lake effect snow hits, you can get 5 inches an hour,
mm-hmm,
and all
mm-hmm
of a sudden you have a highway that's in that 2 hours not, you know, for the most part not passable. Plows can't get down.
Oh man, there was a situation several years ago on I-80 in Pennsylvania. And it was already, you know, it was a forecast mist, had ice mixed in with, you know, that I don't think they were expecting that kind of accumulation. And it just became a nightmare. And you had a ton of big rigs on that interstate. And so I could understand that. So truckers, be aware. 4 p.m. On Thursday,
yeah,
and that's I-90 between,
from what I saw, Rochester and the Pennsylvania state line.
Okay.
It's about 140 right mile.
Wow. Wow.
140 mile section.
That's a huge
stretch. And the thing is, they're still, I mean, they know this no matter what, the snow's coming.
Yeah.
They just don't know, you know, they don't know exactly, you know, who's going to get the worst of it.
Right.
But they know it's going to hit, you know, big time because the storm's coming from the
more of the not westerly, because if it comes westerly over Lake Erie, the as we mentioned yesterday, if people don't understand, it's lake effect snow off of Lake Erie.
Yeah.
And what happens is if Lake Erie, if the water is warm and you have really cold Arctic air, well, then you know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Water goes right up, absorb right into the clouds and drops it right at the next land area. It's that simple. Lake effect snow. Picks up the moisture from a warm lake. Lake Erie is extremely warm for this time of the year. Now, if it freezes, you don't have lake effect snow.
Right.
It's not frozen. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And so it's just one of those times when normally it's coming more westerly. So if it's coming more west to east, the wind that it normally blows up there, then what you would get is, because of where Buffalo is located, they don't really get hit. It's the south towns that gets hit. It's the ski area. It's what they call the snow belt area of New York, that the majority of it's coming westerly. So you're talking about Orchard Park and south, where the stadium is, the Bill Stadium, and then south where you get into, you know, on Route 5 down Dunkirk, Fredonia, Ellicottville, you know, where Allegheny State Park is, all that, which is much more of a rural area. But it's the ski area that's down there. All the ski resorts, you know, because that's where the Boston Hills and then the beginning of the Allegheny Mountains start. And so it's, you know, it's much more of, you know, they're like, yeah, let's get it.
Right.
And they're only expected to get, you know, less than a foot. But you see, you know, my dad, they're still talking about it could be 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet. Some places, maybe, depending how long the wind stays in one particular direction, is where again, the snow bands will be. And it's amazing if you've ever seen some of the pictures, some of the most distinct snow bands I have ever seen in my life are those lake effect snows that come off of Lake Erie. Because it looks like it scares the hell out of you if you see it. Because there's a wall of snow. There's a wall of clouds and snow. Mm-hmm. It's like a wall. It looks like there's a huge glacier moving your way.
Yeah.
From the sky.
Right.
It looks like a 2 mile high glacier because it's just all the snow. So it's all white and the clouds. And it can be sun. It can be sun and then this wall.
Yeah.
And it's the most intimidating thing you could possibly ever see. It's a rare thing to see it, you know, set up like that where you have the sun, but a couple times over the last 10 years have been some great pictures taken. And when you see it first, when you first see pictures like it, you say, that's not real.
Yeah, it looks fake.
I one time saw a picture of it and posted on Facebook, and a guy I know that is actually, you know, works in the media in Buffalo said, hey Mac, that isn't true. And I went, yeah, it is. He came back later, he goes, oh my gosh, it is. And I told him what my reference, this is where it came from, this weather service, whatever. And he goes, wow. Yeah. He said, I've lived here all my life. I never saw that particular picture. And this was where it was just south. I mean, it was just south of Buffalo, so you could see the downtown skyline.
Right.
And then there's this wall.
Yeah.
And it's coming from the sky. And it's like, this is like Independence Day or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the snowfall, when was it, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, where the airport got almost nothing. And 2 miles from the airport,
where my buddy Jeff lives, yeah,
he got like 90 inches of snow in over like a 4 or 5 day period, And they were throwing out now, I think in some of the, because they believe the bands may be moving more and not staying steady, they're saying, you know, probably most areas 3-4 feet. I haven't seen as much the 6 feet because they were talking 72 inches of, we were talking about it last night, some of the predictions, 72, and I haven't checked the map here in a while, 72 inches of snow. And that's where I said, you know, the average snowfall in Buffalo is 95 when you get that. Before winter, before we even get out of November.
It's like, So do they have a prediction model in terms of, like, drifts where the wind
You know, there's no way to predict that.
You know, has a potential of whatever, creating drifts up to whatever.
I guess, yeah. I mean, they would. I haven't seen that model. I haven't seen that yet. But normally when it starts, you'll say, you know, that because of the wind, you could see drifts up to.
Yeah.
You know, and I went through the blizzard of 77 where you had drifts that were 30, 40 feet high. You know, homes would be completely covered.
In fact, a lot of that was wind driven because it was picking up that snow that was on the lake, wasn't it? And then dumping it?
Yes, the Blizzard of 77 is different than what you see now. Mm-hmm. Blizzard of 77 was where Lake Erie was frozen completely, but so much snow had accumulated on over a period of a couple of weeks, you know, on the Lake Erie ice.
Right.
You know, huge, you know, amounts of snow, and you had hurricane-like, it was like almost Cat 1 hurricane winds, 75-mile-an-hour winds, come in, take that snow, push it right off Lake Erie, put it a blizzard.
Yeah.
Take it and just drop it, you know, just take it into the air and drop all of it on Buffalo. I think during the first couple of days of the Blizzard of 77, they did get snow, probably, I'm going to guess, between 20 and 30 inches.
Okay.
But the majority of the snow that was deposited came off the Lake Erie surface of the ice that was blown by, you know, the 75-mile-an-hour wind. Now, if it was 20-mile, average of 20-mile-an-hour, 25, you wouldn't have had anything like it. It was because of that hurricane, almost hurricane-force winds that you had that in the Blizzard of 77. And that was, I mean, that was just the most unbelievable thing.
Yeah.
I think, though, that probably the one they had a couple of years ago where my buddy who lived in Depew, New York, where he got like the 80 inches of snow or 90 inches, whatever it was,
right?
Because he measured it. I mean, that over a couple of day period, I mean, that's mind-boggling in itself because you just watch it going up and up and up, and then it's over your door.
Yeah, right, like, right.
But it's they're supposed to get a ton of snow, and then I'm flying in on Tuesday, and I've been told all clear. Now, the Bills are playing Cleveland Sunday, and they believe that's just about when the snow is supposed to stop. But if they get... And Orchard Park is the beginning of the snow belt, really.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, I don't know how much, but if they can't get in there and shovel it, there's a possibility they would have to cancel the game. You can't play football if there's five. You might be able to clean the field consistently. I don't know how you clear the stands if you're getting 3 to 5 inches an hour.
And there's also time. It takes time to clean up after Cleveland has been in town, right? From what I was told,
well, with the
kind of a Cleveland warning,
Bills
by local officials.
I did go to a Bills game back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of when it would be. I would have been in college, and it was when we got. And they don't do as they do now. Now, I mean, now the NFL. For example, I think a game was canceled. I think it was that snowstorm I was talking about. Game was canceled a few years back where the Bills were supposed to play Detroit. And they ended up playing a couple of days later in Detroit instead of at the stadium in Buffalo.
Right.
But I remember before, because what they do now is if they get a major snowfall, they will hire 1,000 people to come in and actually shovel it out.
You know what? I probably wouldn't mind doing something that would doing it once would be kind of cool. Yeah.
And but back when I remember there was a snowstorm, they didn't do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they'll pay people to come on in with your shovels and we'll pay you this. And so they clear the entire stadium out and they bring in a ton of people and it takes them, I don't know, maybe take them 5, 6, 7 hours, but they've got so many people doing it where they clear it all off. But I remember one time going to a game, I don't know why I'm thinking it was a Denver game. Denver came in. I remember sitting in the end zone, and we were sitting on a snowdrift. We weren't sitting on the seats, and we were digging tunnels in the snow to keep warm, you know, to basically, well, let's dig a little bit of a tunnel. And we had like a tunnel, a little fort, and we had like where you could see out at the game.
Right, right.
We didn't even pay attention to the game. It was such a novelty to be out there.
Yeah, why not, right?
But how do you play football if you have that kind of snow? If you're getting that, if it stops a couple hours before and you're constantly, you know, but if you have the tarp on, because they did have the tarp on the field. And so I don't know how you remove that much snow. They're still, you know, they're still saying the game's supposed to go on as – as scheduled, but you don't know. If you get Saturday night into Sunday morning, if you get, I don't know, 2-3 feet of snow, I can't see a game happening. They might have to cancel it or do, I don't know what they would do, because the Bills play then in Detroit on Sunday. So I don't know how you can't reschedule the game to Monday night and clear the stadium and then play a couple of days later.
Right.
So yeah. Unless they reschedule the Thanksgiving game. But snow is I survived the blizzard of 77, though, and that was the one, the be-all, end-all, because nothing was like, that was just, I mean, that was a national. I remember Jimmy Carter flying in a helicopter because it was so unbelievable. I mean, 30, 40-foot drifts.
Right.
Now, where I lived in the suburbs, we drove around because your cars are not allowed on, and the plows would come, you know, every couple of hours, the plows would be there, so you'd have these, I mean, it was, you couldn't get out of your driveway because your driveway was 25 feet. You dug tunnels. We actually had, my father, I don't know why, for some reason got us those tennis-like snowshoes that we had years before.
Right.
And we actually
walked. Like tennis rackets.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. What'd I say?
Yeah. You said tennis-like, but yeah.
Yeah, tennis rackets. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we walked, but the streets were clear. Somehow we got a car out. You could drive around, mm-hmm. but, you know, you had walls, you know, that the plows pushed up that were 20, 25 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
It was bizarre. It was really bizarre. But things are supposed to, you know, it's supposed to be fine by the time I fly in, and temperatures in the upper 30s and lower 40s.
All right.
So, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, talking about snow belts, if you ever want to look at both Lake Ontario and Lake Erie and think about if a weather system comes straight across, you know, looking at the major snow they're talking about for western New York.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it, if it comes straight across from the west, you can see, you know, where the snow belts would be, because it's right where they would drop, where the snow would drop on lands, mm-hmm. if Lake Erie isn't frozen. But to give you a better example of actual snow belts, Watertown is one of the places that gets off of on the eastern part of Lake Erie, or excuse me, on Lake Ontario, gets some of the most snow ever. Lake Ontario never freezes; it's too deep.
Huh.
And so you look at it when the majority of storms that come slightly, you know, more westerly, slightly south, you see that right over Lake Ontario, all the water that is picked up before it drops it on Watertown, which is why they're one of the places that gets some of the most snow in the United States.
Mm.
This is Red Eye Radio. On Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, redeyeradioshow.com, or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.